This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Every summer, youth reporters give WUNC listeners a chance to see the world through their eyes. The reporters head out into the community. They cover stories from a fresh perspective that is often overlooked in the headlines. WUNC's Youth Reporting Institute runs from June to August. This is August. They have wrapped it up, and they're in the studio with me now. Anthony Howard is a rising senior at Wakefield High School in Raleigh. Ambrosia DeCondo is a rising senior at the Durham School of the Arts. Rajiv Dutta is a rising freshman at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And also with us, Emmanuel Tobe, a mentor with the Youth Reporting Institute, a rising sophomore at Elon University. All rise. He said, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you all here.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Let's talk about, Manny, let me talk to you because you've been with this project the longest. Tell us a little bit about how this project goes and what happened this year.
So for the WUNC Youth Reporting Institute, what usually happens is we have either six or seven reporters, youth reporters, and we give them 6 to 8 weeks to basically tell a story about their community. And, you know, the reason for it is that the station wants to give youth the opportunity to utilize their voice and to tell stories that usually aren't really told in their communities. So that's kind of what the program is for. And each of the reporters learns like the kind of the steps of producing the radio story, the editing, interviewing, script writing, things like that.
It's a great two-way process for us because on the one hand, reporters, young reporters, get to learn a little bit about the technique and the craft of storytelling through radio. But then we learn a lot about what we're missing when we're not asking the right questions to the right people. Anthony, let me start with you because you wanted to find out more about the mobilization of young voters. First of all, tell me your interest in this. Why did you choose that as your topic?
Well, originally I wanted to do a story on gun control, and David Brower, our director, he pitched the idea of doing a story on youth voting. And so I kind of took the idea and I morphed it with youth because that's what I really wanted to focus on, youth activism. So I used youth voting and I combined that with youth activism to really look at, is youth activism going to encourage youth to turn out in the polls, especially in November since we have this midterm coming up?
So how did you go about framing that and creating a story from that idea?
Well, of course, focusing on youth, but now I'm not only focusing on the entire demographic, but I'm specifically focusing on Black youth and as to why they aren't voting and how they are so small in voter statistics. And I want to look at that and what are some of the reasons, because there's no simple answer as to why Black youth aren't voting. So that's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at how it depends on your demographic. It depends on your social, your economic status. It depends on so many different things. And that's what I really wanted to highlight with this story.
What were the statistics? What did you find in terms of voter turnout?
Well, in 2018, there are currently 210,000 young Black people registered to vote. But in the May primary that just recently passed, only 6,500 of them came out to vote. So that shows you how, even though we have so many that are registered, we still have a large group that aren't knowledgeable about primaries and midterms.
All right. So you went out canvassing with a progressive organization called Flip NC, and you got the perspective of some young, at least one young political canvasser. Tell us a little bit about Flip NC and then what you learned in your interviews.
Well, Flip NC is a voter canvassing group that is trying to kind of flip North Carolina from Republican to Democrat. So they're really reaching out to people who are liberal, more independent, and trying to get them to really vote. That way we can have more democratic legislators in our public office. And so I found somebody who was 14 years old, and she kind of resembled who I was and how we're so young and we aren't even eligible to vote, but we're still out there really campaigning, advocating for voting rights amongst youth. And so that is who I want to highlight in the story.
Well, I'm going to play a clip from your story, which starts with your reflections about seeing more young people becoming politically active after the Parkland shooting.
Young people, just like me, getting out there and demanding change is pretty cool. Being Black, it is empowering to know that youth voices are being heard. But for Jose Marrero, a Black 19-year-old growing up in North Durham, that's not his reality.
If I know you're going to actually do something for the community, if I know you're actually going to, like, stand your ground and not try to, like, bail out on us, then I want to vote for you. But if I know you're not gonna, if you're just all talk when you're in front of people and you're not actually making anything happen, then I wouldn't want to vote for you.
Jose falls into the group of black teens that aren't involved in politics. He didn't grow up in a household that talked about primaries and midterms, so for Jose, he needs to see change before he sees a poll booth.
My neighborhood looks janky. Janky means, like, it looks bad. Like, my whole side of town needs a whole, like, it need a lot of stuff done to it. Like, our streets are horrible. Stuff like that in schools, neighborhoods, if they come out and actually make that change, I'd be like, whoa, I'd be actually surprised, and I want to vote for them.
All right, that's a clip from Youth Radio reporter Anthony Howard's story. Anthony is part of WUNC's Youth Reporting Institute, and he joins me with youth reporters Rajiv Dutta, Ambrosia DeCanto, and also project mentor Emmanuel Tobe. So tell me what you knew or what your ideas about youth engagement were before you did this, and give me a sense of whether or not and then how things changed for you.
Well, I knew that ever since Parkland and youth activism has kind of really made a push. There's been a push, especially in the media, giving attention to youth and giving them a voice and giving them a platform. So I knew that youth were out there doing stuff. And even before Parkland, I knew that youth were out here, especially locally, trying to push for change in politics. And so as I kind of through the summer and into this internship, I really wanted to focus on locally what are people doing. So that's why I talked with Flip NC and also other youth organizations. And I really wanted to see if all these changes and if what they were doing were really going to push for youth who weren't knowledgeable, like Jose, who we just listened to, would that be able to get them to want to be engaged in the political process.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the assumptions too, because people like public radio, legacy institutions have been framing this, the post-Parkland engagement, as those youth who had not been engaged, so that there was an assumption or prejudice on the part, I think, written into all the stories or many of the stories in legacy organizations, that the assumption was youth were not engaged and maybe Parkland is changing that. What was your sense of that prejudice, that sense that kids don't care?
I knew that was true. I knew a lot of people felt as if youth were just not knowledgeable. They didn't care about politics. But that wasn't true. And even before Parkland, that wasn't true. It's just that they weren't shown on a platform to where we could see them on magazine covers, to where we could see them on CNN town halls. And that's when people start looking at it like, oh, just now after everything has happened, something tragic has happened, now youth want to be vocal when youth have already been vocal prior to Parkland. So I think it's just that now it's nationalized and it's popularized to the point where people are now thinking that youth are all of a sudden energized and really wanting to be take part in politics, when beforehand that was always the case.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to pivot now to another reporter who is with us. Rose, your piece ended up being about an intimate feature story. Tell us about the person that you profiled in your piece.
Yeah. Their name is Claude Steichleather. They're someone that I met at this summer camp that we both went to, mm-hmm. Girls Rock NC. They were just really... Well, I met them at Girls Rock, and then I ended up going to high school with them. I didn't know we were going to end up going to the same high school, because when we met at Girls Rock, it's like, oh, this person is so cool, and they play the same instrument I do. And usually, I would meet people at Girls Rock, and they'd be really awesome, and then I would never see them again, because it's summer camp, and then I ended up seeing them again. They went to the same school as me, which was awesome. So, yeah.
And you're using the pronoun they, because yeah. Claude is non-binary, and this is mm-hmm. a very big part of her personality and her story, right?
They are, the story is about them being non-binary and sort of how they define that. So yeah, it's sort of about that, as opposed to, like, with my mentor, we were looking at stories on NPR. Most of the stories were about trans people, like their transition process, and this is sort of different because there's not really like, oh, now that I've had this procedure, I finally am who I want to be. It's more like, this is just who I am, and I'm not, like, it's just different, I think.
Yeah, well, let's hear a clip, and I think it explains it very well. Let's listen.
I just feel like the two boxes of what gender can be, neither of them particularly make sense for me, and I don't feel comfortable being strictly either one. I feel really great, like, existing outside of that, as I said, being, I don't know, it's not because I want to be unique and a special snowflake or whatever. It's because it's like a, it's not a choice I made. It's just a thing in my heart and my brain and my soul, maybe. I don't know about souls.
That's a clip from youth radio reporter Ambrosia DeCanto's story that profiles friend and mentor Claude Stikeleather. Tell us about the difficulty of telling a story that essentially I can't work within the framework that you are most familiar, that is a binary sexual identities, right, gender identities. And now you're saying, okay, that's where you start as a listener. I have to take you someplace you haven't been. What was the challenge for you in just creating a story like that?
Well, I wanted to introduce Claude's pronouns and how they, they were non-binary as soon as I could within the story, just so that, so that it made sense, so that the listener wasn't like, oh, why is it they? And I also, this is a little bit specific, but I also had to make sure I wasn't using the word there too much, like different forms of there, to make sure it wasn't, too monotonous, which...
No, it's an important technical point, right? I mean, now you're faced with this challenge where in normal language, we have learned to speak a certain way, and you're trying to say, I want to create a new normal here. I have to come up with a new vocabulary or use vocabulary in a different way.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it wasn't so much... I mean, I've known them since I was maybe in eighth grade, so it's not like I had to completely shift the way that I spoke because I'm sort of used to it. I just have to make sure that the way I'm speaking makes sense to other people.
Sure, and that's an important thing. Once you go to communicate, it's one thing to understand the story, but now you've got to tell it to people who don't. Has it changed you in any? You suggest that you did understand this and had an evolving sense and probably a more mature sense than many of the rest of us about this. Did it change you in any way, having done the piece?
I mean, I just had to make sure that I wasn't... I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't objectifying my friend in any way or asking something that wasn't... Like, I had this conversation with my mentors and with my dad, who's also a journalist. There are some questions that I don't want to ask because, I care about this person. And there's also, I need to make sure that I'm doing right by them because we are close. So that was a little, just making sure that I was representing them.
That is a very sophisticated point of view, and one that journalists, if they don't struggle with, should. And then in working through the struggle, get better with every piece. Nice work. Let me talk to you, Rajiv Dutta, about the piece that you set out to tell, more of a feature piece. Tell us about it.
Yeah. So basically, it's about me and a group of my friends who are jazz musicians going to this retirement community called the Forest of Duke. And our goal is, we love jazz music in our teenage years, and the residents there love jazz music in their teenage years. So we're hoping to bring them a little bit of nostalgia by bringing this music back to them.
And what was the focus of the piece? I mean, there's what you're going to do, right? That's how it's going to happen. What was your hope in, what did you want to achieve in producing this piece?
Yeah. So my hope was that I would share that, the younger generation is interested in connecting with the older generation. I think we have this misconception that the youth live in their own little bubble and they're not really interested in interacting with anybody else. But my intention was to go out there and share, no, we're interested in benefiting from the wisdom of the people that came before us and interacted with this music and interacted with humanity. So that was a little bit the direction I was headed.
Well, let's play a clip from the piece that you produced.
The audience settled in with their walkers and wheelchairs. It's amazing that when they were my age, jazz was their pop music. Now, we can share it together.
Take the A train. It's just so familiar to me.
Take the A Train has a special place in my heart. It was one of the first songs I learned to play on the double bass. I always loved the classic Ellington piano intro. And then, bang, the whole band comes in.
That's a clip of youth radio producer Rajiv Dutta's story, part of the WUNC Youth Reporting Institute. He is here with two other reporters and a mentor in that project. So you had this idea, and you had this common, this point of common cultural connection. Then you produced the piece. Did anything change for you?
Absolutely. I think if music isn't changing you, it's not doing its job. But, because I had what I set out to do when I did the story. And then I went and I did it, and I had a lot of interactions that surprised me. So I ended up actually talking to Marisa Galvani, who is a former New York City opera singer. And she just had so much wisdom to share with me about music that I wasn't expecting. So, you know, I came into that with my goals, and I left achieving that goal, but also with like a really special bit of wisdom from, you know, a place that people my age normally wouldn't expect.
Yeah, and you found this tangent, right? This one point on the circle where you both sort of crossed, right? Music, mm-hmm. and particularly jazz music. The point where people disperse and divert is point of divergence would be over forms of media, forms of communication. Mm-hmm. Obviously, social media very important to younger folks. Not so much to the folks at the Forest of Duke, I would guess. Many of my friends are there, and we aren't using it to that degree. So are there enough points to really connect us, or is the whole method of communicating, social media, the idea that everybody's getting kind of the siloed information, going to win the race? I mean, are you optimistic that we can actually bring it together, or are we diverting at a faster rate? That's really the question here.
Yeah. Well, I think as far as people go, we have a tendency to maybe focus on the negative, but the very strong penetrating positive that I see there is the music. And I think if we're focusing more on what connects us and more on what allows us to cherish the connections that we do have, investing in those, that's never going to fade away, but it's not going to happen passively. We as youth and the older generation, we both need to be making that effort to focus on the things that connect us, so we won't let it diverge.
Well, let me ask you a variation on that same question, Rose, because you talked, you know, just thoughtfully now about the means of communication. I mean, this is actually a craft. Is there a mission here? I mean, do you feel, because you don't have to, the mission does not have to be the kumbaya moment around the campfire, but do you have a kind of hope, or do you see it as part of your mission to use communication as a common language, or is it a kind of more siloed mission for you? Let's talk to the people who I'm connected with.
I mean, the goal with my story was definitely to try to portray Claude as someone who's not like Claude said, like there's this phrase, special snowflake, which really irks me to no end, but to try to, like, this is a normal person. This is someone I've known for a long time, and to me, like, that is normal, and I want other people to see that. And like in my piece, Claude's personality really comes out, and they're like really funny person. I just want people to see that it's not that strange if you just like back up and like take it all in for a second. Like you don't have to understand everything right away. Sometimes you can just let things be.
Anthony, what about you in terms of communication? You've learned this new technique, right? Going forward, do you see? I'm going to ask you the big question. If you see us all kind of converging or diverging because the means of communication have changed and are changing so quickly?
I think it's both, because as, like you said, social media is so big right now. So a lot of times we're not having that face-to-face interaction. So that's where it kind of diverges, but it converges through things like what Raj is saying, through music, through those like-minded experiences and different things that we all share and have in common. So I think it's a little bit of both.
All right, Emmanuel, Manny, I've given you about 30 seconds to wrap it up. How have things changed over the 3 years that you've done or stayed the same? What's the big takeaway for you?
Ultimately, it's just kind of being here and just learning different things. The last couple of years when I was a youth reporter, I had like, you know, my story, one story, and I was just kind of focused on that. But being able to kind of step out of like my vision and just kind of watch, you know, these six really intelligent kids do their story and just go through that process has been like eye-opening for me as well.
Great stuff. We have three of them here on the program with us. Anthony Howard, a rising senior at Wakefield High School in Raleigh. Ambrosia DeCanto, rising senior at the Durham School of the Arts. And Rajiv Dutta, a rising freshman at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. They're reporters for the WUNC Youth Reporting Institute. Emmanuel Tobe is a mentor. And you can hear more stories from the Youth Reporting Institute at a listening party tonight, 7 o'clock, Motorco in Durham. Thank you all very much for being on the program.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Coming up on the State of Things, a look at the changing concept of home through photos at an exhibit in Wilson, North Carolina. Stay tuned.